Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Whoa, whoa.
Oh,
whoa,
good.
Whoa. Must be Charlton, because hello, no notice. Boom, here we go.
God.
Hey, everybody. Kai Rizdahl is who I am. Make Me Smart is the name of this podcast. Making Today Make Sense is what we do.
It's our jam. I'm Molly Wood. I'm back. It feels like it's been a month.
I'm sorry, who are you?
I'm ready. Huh? I know, totally. I'm going to dust off the cobwebs. Got a little bit of dust in the teeth and things.
Yep.
Anyway,
I'm
back.
To do this.
Ready to dive in. I'm sorry, how many minutes do we have, Charlton?
Well, now we've got 14, so go ahead.
I'm asking him because I know that he'll be precise. We are going to do the usual. It is Monday, a little news fix, a little make me smile, and then off we go.
Off we
into
go.
Into the land of boxes.
All right, go ahead. You're back, so, go first.
I'm back. We had all of last week off from school. And then, of course, I was off moving. And now we're back in school. And it was the perfect day to get this New York Times story about how not only are parents and students having an incredibly difficult time. There were a couple stories last week about how a lot of schools are returning to regular grading, despite the fact that, a lot of kids are still at home and it's all like a hot mess. But that also we should not forget, and I cannot forget because I have a sister-in-law who teaches in public school here in Oakland, that teachers are falling apart. And I was just so glad that they did this story. And they talked about how what was so interesting is that they talked about how remote teaching, of course, is incredibly difficult for teachers, especially if they're hands-on, if it's science and it's experiments and it's art, and they have especially for younger children, they're having to retool their entire curriculum, which means writing new lesson plans whenever they're not teaching. So lots and lots of extra hours of work. But that the worst for teachers is the hybrid model, where they have some kids at home, some kids at school. They're trying to switch back and forth. Sometimes they teach some in-person classes and then have to go teach online. And they're doing these like crazy 13, 15-hour days. And teachers are just leaving.
Yeah.
In droves.
Yeah. Yep.
It's absolutely brutal.
Yep. It is brutal. And look, props to you. Excuse me. Props are you to you for pointing out that the whole school thing was going to become a crucible of this entire pandemic, right? Parents, teachers, kids, also, by the way, politicians, see also Bill de Blasio, the mayor of the great city of New York, being hoisted on his own petard about closing and then opening and then closing and then opening. It's just, it is the, I think it's, honestly, I think it's one of the defining issues of this pandemic is what we have done and are doing to schools and kids and the people in that whole ecosystem for sure.
Thank you. I agree. I really do think it is the defining issue of the pandemic. And yet, why is it not more so?
Oh, yeah.
It remarkable,
Yeah.
Really remarkable. And one of the things that people said, peanut.
Hang on. Wait one sec. Hey, Bonds, come here. Bonds, come here. Come here. I know. It's just going to be you and me in here. I'm going to close the door once you get in here. Sorry. One of the things people said was,
this is like my favorite part of the show. One of the things that I saw on Twitter from Nicole Hannah-Jones was that in New York City, for example, with the Bill de Blasio quite rightly taking it in the shorts for the decision making here, was that to close schools where infection rates have been negligible, like really apparently have been in New York City, to close schools but leave open bars and gyms and restaurants.
I just don't get that. I just
says everything about, but it says everything about the way that we feel about education in this country, particularly public schools and primarily Black and Brown kids who are being disenfranchised the most by this. Yep. And look, I get it. It's an impossible position. The governor of California finds himself in a similar position with respect to businesses being open because there's no help for business owners. Yep. I do understand that. But at the same time, like, we just seem to be doing this. It's going to define a generation, especially if we then continue to expect that everybody will have thrived at the rate they were supposed to and just reinforce all the standards next year. It's just, what are we doing?
Well, so to that thing of thrive the way they were supposed to, and there really ought to be a law against this, but I'm about to break it, this idea of citing something you saw on the internet without actually citing it, because it went by on my Twitter feed today really fast. But it's the months of education, of practical education, actual tangible education lost so far in this pandemic, broken down by racial and ethnic and socioeconomic degrees. And upper middle class white kids lost, you know, like 3 months of like learning, you know, they'll get that back, whatever. You know, you go to the disadvantaged neighborhoods of the black and brown kids, and it's 18 months, 2 years, that fundamentally those kids and eventually those adults, right? Because that's what happens to people. They grow up, are never going to get back.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, it is unconscionable and just ongoing. And I'm just going to keep on bringing it up.
Yeah. Well, look, you were early on this and props to you. Totally. Props to you. Okay. So mine, I've got two. Really, it's only one and a half because I just want to mention the second one kind of in passing. Exxon of ExxonMobil of oil company fame has lost $2.3 billion over the first three quarters of this year, right? So that's a chunk of money. But it also said today it's going to spend way less money to boost oil and gas production, right? And it's going to cut the book value of its assets, and part of its assets are, of course, the oil that it has in the ground, by as much as $20 billion as it tries to figure out what this next decade is going to be like. The moral of the story is that ExxonMobil, one of the big companies in the world, and obviously hugely important as long as we're still a fossil fuel economy, is betting that this pandemic's effects are going to last a decade or more. So you've got Jay Powell saying there's going to be longstanding damage to this economy. You've got ExxonMobil. You've got lots of people who know saying, look, things are looking good at the very macro level. But at the place where rubber meets the road in this economy, which is consumer demand, right? It's because consumers drive so much of the spending in this economy. Where the rubber meets the road, and I'm just realizing as I say it for the second time that it's kind of pun not intended with an
oil company. It's a total pun. I know. I've just been biting my lip over here like, hee.
It's still really ugly. It's still really ugly. And I think as we get all – well, jubilant's too strong. But as we all get excited – about a vaccine and light at the end of the tunnel, and maybe like by next fall we could have enough people inoculated so that school can start and we can get those kids back in, to Molly's point, right? Maybe there's, you know, some hope on the horizon. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves is what ExxonMobil is saying. And that is worth a note here as we stick to the mission of this podcast, which is pointing out things you might have missed. Okay, the other thing I wanted to just point out, because I don't quite understand it. I mean, I understand it, but I don't understand it, is that Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency, kind of the granddaddy of cryptocurrencies, hit a record high today, $19,000 and change, which is kind of amazing because are you kidding me that this is what people are plowing their money into? I mean, yes, it's different than it was in 2017 when it hit, you know, almost $20,000 per Bitcoin before. And yes, there's been some systemic acceptance. But this thing that is really sort of untested as anything other than a way to buy people's social security numbers on the dark web or worse is now having this huge spike in value is really interesting. And I don't know what to make of it.
It appears to be the new gold, which I think is super fascinating. Yeah. We should maybe do... Yeah. I'm terrified
maybe
to even say
should,
this
actually.
Because, man, the Bitcoin people on the internet are... terrifying. And I mean, like, it's like if you took the Tesla people and then you made them even more crazy on Twitter than you have the cryptocurrency people. And
That's
I know what's going to happen now, but I think it could be worth doing an updated episode because it is really fascinating that it's only gained value as an asset class and little else. Like, I'm shocked at how little acceptance there is of it as a way to buy things.
Right.
It's just really,
I mean, you remember back a couple of years ago, everybody was like, oh, there's like a cupcake shop in Detroit that will take Bitcoin for cupcakes. And you're like, oh, yes, it's catching on and it's going to be the thing. And now it's not.
Yeah.
Sorry. We also talked to
you. Not really. We, my producer, Stephanie, who's talked to a tax person earlier in the pandemic, who said that there was a noticeable spike in Bitcoin sales after the stimulus checks came out, i.e. Bitcoin sales in the exact amount of $1,200.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is great.
Plenty of people use their stimulus checks to buy Bitcoin.
Wow.
Fascinating.
That's amazing. Yep. Yeah. Well, every now and then I think of that marketplace engineer who like 6 or 8 years ago had like 15 or 20 Bitcoin. And I wonder if he still got them. And
I had my 300. Yeah. You know my Bitcoin sob story.
No.
That I got. Oh, really? I try not to think about it very often because once in a while I do the math. Oh, yes. Once upon a time in 2013 or 2014, I bought 300 Bitcoin when Bitcoin was $1. And then the exchange that handled the Bitcoin got hacked, MTGOX. Everybody knows this. Everybody in the Bitcoin community knows this story.
Yes,
and my Bitcoin was lost. And there were like a bunch of emails that were like, you should try to recover your account. And I sort of like didn't pay that much attention, but I kind of did because I didn't. And then I tried to recover my account a whole bunch of times, but it would never work. And I finally gave up. And every once in a while, I do the math on what my 300 Bitcoin would be worth. And then I just realized that apparently God wants me to work for whatever I get in this life.
Oh, man. Sorry, I'm just going to do this right now. 300 times 20,000 at today's close. Molly, that's $6 million.
I know.
Oh my God. Oh, man.
Bravo, sir. Bravo. Tears are literally coming out of my eyes right now.
Oh, man.
Bravo. Bravo. So on that note, it would be great if you guys could give us some money. Oh, my God, I'm dying.
All right.
No, but for real, actually, amazingly. It is Giving Tuesday tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
In the greatest segue that has ever happened in Make Me Smart history.
Oh, man.
If you, too, bought Bitcoin and managed to recover your account after the big MTGOX hack, or you're a public media nerd, you know that that means that we are starting our our quarterly fundraiser.
I don't know.
This is real. This is real.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So here's the deal. Starting tomorrow, the Candida Fund is going to match donations 3-for-1. It's our biggest match ever. It's a lot. That means if you go to marketplace.org/donate and give $50, it becomes $200. If you donate $100, it becomes $400. Keep on going from there, and you get to 300 Bitcoin times $20,000 is $6 million.
I was just going to say, it's like exponential growth. It's like Bitcoin growth. That's bananas.
That's right.
And we don't even by the way, there is no stunt eating or drinking involved in this. No pumpkin spice booze. Do not. No.
But we did that. We will take suggestions for next year's fall themed thing. You know, no guarantees, no promises. But anyway, that's that.
I almost made a comment that I decided not to make because people would be like, good idea. So I'm not saying it. You can give at marketplace.org/donate.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Hit this thing. Let's go. I'll go first, and I'll do it just because mine's a quickie. After the markets close at 1 o'clock LA time, I flip over to CNN just to get some news and have some noise rambling in the background. And today, Jake Tapper was talking to somebody, I don't even know who, about the brouhaha in some Republican circles in the Senate about Neera Tanden, who has been nominated or will be nominated. I don't know if she actually has formally yet. Anyway, Neera Tanden to be the head of the Office of Management and Budget. And Ms. Tanden is outspoken in her critique of the Trump administration and some Republican senators. And now Republican senators are all up in arms and are saying things like she has tweeted very negative things about some of the members of this body on this side of the aisle. And Jake Tapper said today, "Am I to understand mean tweets are now important to Republican senators?" And I just thought that was...
Hey-o!
Mwah! Chef's kiss. Chef's kiss. After 4 years of, no, I'm sorry, I didn't see the president's tweet this morning.
I didn't see the tweets. They're just tweets. That is hashtag be best.
I just thought that was perfect.
Right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I have good news to report that is along the lines of Exxon's. I was biting my tongue during that too, because yes, although some of this is likely related to the damage being incurred now that could last for a decade or longer, certainly in our economy. It also turns out that increasingly fossil fuels are being viewed as a bad investment, a bad long-term investment. And so I talked recently on the show about a Canadian bank, I think, that was refusing to do fossil fuel investing. Bank of America, as of today, now became the last major U.S. bank. As of today, every major U.S. bank has said it will not fund Arctic drilling projects.
Hmm.
So that even though the Trump administration has sort of like trying to push through these plans to lease all of these pristine lands in the Arctic, all of these U.S. institutions have basically said, like, here's the deal. In addition to being bad politics, sure, it's not good business. Fossil fuels are on the way out, and it is a bad investment, which I think is just, I mean, when you look at, like, Exxon, the world's most powerful company, the company that arguably like buried a ton of climate change research, stumbling. And then, you know, every major U.S. bank and a lot of international ones, too, saying like, here's the thing, though, like because of climate risk and, you know, renewable energy and electric cars, like, and frankly, Tesla, for all I, you know, have to say about Elon Musk, arriving on the S&P 500 as like the, you know, standard bearer for renewable energy and electric cars.
Yep.
Like the times are changing.
Yeah.
And it made me smile.
Yeah, for sure. There you go. That's good news. It's good news.
I am so excited to discover via our lineup here, although I'm sure I was told, that tomorrow's show, I'm really excited about this. I've totally been wanting to do this deep dive on retirement savings and the history of the 401k, where they came from. Do they actually help people save for retirement or just eat up all your fees? What's the deal? And we're doing it. We're doing it tomorrow.
We are. We are doing it tomorrow. In the meanwhile, while you wait for that one to hit your feed, drop us a line, comment, question, you know, whatever you like. Make me smart at marketplace.org. And we read them all, by the way. We read them all, listen to them all, and then put some of them on the air. So there you go.
Yeah. Yay. I'm waiting.
I know.
Here it comes.
I know.
Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner, and Erica Phillips writes our newsletter and the Make Me Smart skill on your smart device. She should really get more credit for those. They are excellent.
They are excellent. I did mine today, by the way, Erica, so they're done. Today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe of the Dark Sting at the amazingly appropriate time.
Good.
Daniel Ramirez and Ben Talladay composed our theme music. The senior producer is Donna Tam. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves.
Only 3 minutes over.
But come on. Like 2.5 of that was laughing at the darkness. Come on.
And a little bit of like dog stuff.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the mean tweets. That's brilliant.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.